Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
In our culture, we have a three-headed monster, what I call the unholy trinity: pluralism, relativism, and universalism.
I've heard some folks tell me that making the sign of the cross isn't Lutheran. All of these catechisms say to pray this way: make the sign of the cross and say, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Now, you can't get any more Lutheran than the scriptures and your catechism.
When you think that your experience of the divine somehow is on par with scripture, then at that point, whether you admit it or not, you've made yourself into a prophet.
If he just said, go make disciples and do whatever it takes to get him in the door, if Jesus had just said, go make disciples and use any means you want, but he didn't. He went on. He said, go make disciples of all nations, baptizing and teaching.
A little bit of a preview for our soundbite of the week coming up here in about 20 minutes on Issues Etc. We'll play those four soundbites in their entirety for you and then give you a chance to call, email, and vote for soundbite of the week this Friday afternoon, September the 18th. In the meantime, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway joins us. She's a journalist in Washington, D.C., a contributor to GetReligion.org, and author of a column in the Wall Street Journal titled Faith-Based Double Standards. I remember back when President Obama was running for president, and he talked a lot, not only here in the United States, but also abroad, about faith-based initiatives. He seemed to pick up on something that President Bush introduced to us. And I wonder, how is the press covering it then? Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks so much for having me.
It was a campaign issue for the president when he was running. Did you already at the time notice what you call a double standard in the media's coverage of faith-based initiatives?
Well, now if you go back 8 years to when President Bush was running, faith-based initiatives were controversial, but the coverage wasn't quite so negative as it became during his presidency. And likewise, when President Obama was running for office, the coverage was really favorable. And a big part of that was because one of the most controversial parts of President Bush's faith-based efforts, then candidate Obama said he would do away with, and that was under President Bush's plan. If you were a religious charity receiving federal funds, you would not have to hire against your conscience. You could hire fellow co-religionists, and that was an important thing of President Bush's initiative. And President Obama said that if he were elected, he would do away with that. And the press particularly liked that, since they that had been one of the big things they had complained about under Bush.
Does President Obama actually have an office or a department of faith-based initiatives, as did his predecessor?
Yeah, he has. It's interesting. He has basically it's the same structure. Every single thing that President Bush set up, which he set up through executive order, every single regulation and guideline has been preserved. It's been kept intact. And I just want to point out, as I was just saying, President Obama said he would not allow religious groups to hire, you know, whoever they wanted. They had to follow religious non-discrimination clauses. Even that has been kept the same as President Bush had it. President Bush always had it handled by the Justice Department, whether an organization was following the law. And that's exactly what President Obama has done. So literally nothing has changed at all.
Except you contend the media coverage. You write about a recent Pew Charitable Trust study about such things. What did you find out?
Well, what the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life found was that basically there had been no contentious coverage of President Obama's faith-based initiative. All of the myriad problems that we heard about throughout the 8 years of President Bush's faith-based office have just sort of miraculously disappeared. Whereas people would concentrate on this hiring issue or other constitutional questions when they covered Bush, the press just has pretty much ignored it, or they speak back to how President Obama claimed he would change this Bush policy, and they don't really mention that it hasn't actually been changed. So the Pew people found that there's just been something like 7 times more coverage of Bush's office than Obama's, and that the stories themselves tended to be more contentious with Bush than with Obama's, and the stories about Bush tended to run on the first page, whereas they're kind of buried later in the paper for Obama.
What about groups like American United for the Separation of Church and State? Have they changed their way of talking about this thing they've always been concerned about?
Well, Americans United for Separation of Church and State was one of the more vocal critics of Bush's faith-based office. And, you know, it was a major bread-and-butter issue for them in terms of, you know, reaching out to their members and getting money and whatnot during the Bush administration. And officially, they say they still don't like, you know, how Obama's office is going. On the other hand, the head of Americans United for Separation of Church and State is now actually working with the faith-based office. So when Bush was in office, he said it's horrible, it needs to be done away with, it's evil, and now the head of Americans United says, well, and that's Reverend Barry Lynn, says, oh, it's, or Barry Lynn says, it's fine, and, you know, he'd like to improve how it works, and he's actually working with the office. And the irony, I feel like, is that the President Obama's faith-based office is so much more political than President Bush's office could have ever dreamed of being. I mean, and I say this as a critic of both offices. I actually don't support having a faith-based office for any administration. But under Bush's office in the White House, they were sort of crafting policy and just trying to level the playing ground, making sure that religious charities could apply for federal funds. And under Obama's office, they're actually, like, reaching out to faith-based leaders to lobby them to help out with healthcare reform. They're doing phone calls where they say, here's the policy we want to enact, and we need you to help. They're telling, they did a conference call with 1,000 rabbis where President Obama suggested that the rabbis preach on healthcare reform during their New Year sermons. I mean, it's things that President Bush would have never even dreamed of doing, or if he had even come close to doing, the media would have pounced on it. And now there's out-and-out lobbying going on and very little policy or substance going on, and the media are just completely silent about it.
Okay, now see, there's a difference, because it sounds as though this is now kind of Office for Political Affairs or White House Church Relations Office kind of a thing, or Synagogue Relations Office. Can you tell me, I mean, I've been talking about this for a long time. I've never really, and I've even interviewed some of the principals from President Bush's Office for Faith-Based Initiatives, and I've never been able to figure out what the goal is here. Why have an Office of Faith-Based Initiatives at the White House?
Well, under Bush's, there were sort of 2 major themes under Bush's office. First off, it was just this belief that religious groups should not be discriminated against when it comes to getting the big chunk of federal dollars that go to social programs. And so the theme was sort of leveling the playing field. After, you know, several years, maybe after 5 years of working to change the regulatory structure so that religious groups could compete for these funds, then it became more about working with religious and other nonprofits on what is the best policy approach to solving entrenched problems. So if it was something like there's a high recidivism rate for prisoners who leave, who get out of jail and then they, you know, a high percentage of them come back, they would look at all these different nonprofit groups, some of them religious, and say what works best, and they might find that a particular work program worked best, and so they would try and point policy in that direction to support that kind of work program. So it was kind of a policy shop. I just want to also clarify that the big complaint with Bush in terms of the politics of his office was that they said that his office would run training sessions for religious nonprofits in how to compete for federal funds, that they would target those training sessions in politically sensitive areas. And that was a big complaint, which I also share, actually. But it's just nothing compared to directly targeting, you know, a group of 1,000 rabbis or other religious leaders and asking them to help lobby for a particular policy change or political change, I mean.
Let's take a quick phone call before we take a break with one more question on the other side of the break from Molly Ziegler Hemingway. Steve is calling from St. Louis. Hi, Steve.
Hey. You know, I read that article in the Wall Street Journal. It came out last week, and I loved it. One of the thoughts was something that Terry Mattingly said on your show, Todd, when he said that the religion of the media is politics, and on the religious left, they agree with the politics of the religious left, so that's why they're going to cut him slack versus the politics of the religious right. And if you look at Jesse Jackson running for president versus like a Mike Huckabee, both who are doing ministers, how did the press treat them?
That's a great question, Steve. Thank you very much. I'm sure you've heard Terry opine on that. Molly, let's take his first question first. What about the religion of the media is politics?
Well, certainly, you see that in how the media tend to cover those religious groups that are more politically involved rather than ones that see a clearer separation between church and state. First off, that's a big issue. And then, of course, studies have shown from the same Pew forum that we're discussing here, have shown that the media are overwhelmingly liberal on almost every social and political issue. They're just overwhelmingly liberal. That isn't to say that every reporter who is liberal is going to be biased in their coverage, but it's pretty apparent that they're more comfortable with the religion of with the politically religious left than they are with the politically religious right. And you see that in in myriad ways, but this is certainly one of them. I mean, you have clear increase in politicization of this office, but because it's for political issues that the religious left favors, well, all of a sudden it's no big deal.
When we come back, a few more questions from Molly Ziegler-Hemingway on media double standards for faith-based initiatives. We'll take up Steve's second question there. He cited as an example the difference on how presidential candidates are covered when they have an overtly religious association, Jesse Jackson versus Mike Huckabee. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. It's Friday, September the 18th. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a journalist in Washington, D.C., a contributor to GetReligion.org, and author of a column in the Wall Street Journal titled Faith-Based Double Standards. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org. is our in-studio email address. And if you're following us at Twitter, you can reach us at IssuesETC. After a few more questions with Molly, it's time for Soundbite of the Week. Stay tuned.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org. And click on-demand audio.
Village Lutheran Church in Ladue thanks God for His saving gift of faith through Christ and invites you to share in this gift by worshiping with us Sunday mornings at 8:15 or 10:45. We're conveniently located 1 mile west of the Galleria on Clayton Road. For more information, call 314-993-1834 or visit villagelutheranchurch.org. Village Lutheran Church, ordinary people loved by an extraordinary God. VillageLutheranChurch.org.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Ending life in a life-honoring way.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Proponents of euthanasia hailed the legal assisted suicide of a 66-year-old woman in Washington State as death with dignity. But dying with dignity does not involve suicide. Modern medicine administered compassionately through hospice care can do much to help terminally ill patients leave this life with dignity. Hospice care does not seek to prevent death. Rather, it affirms life and views dying as a natural part of life. By respecting the unique gift of human life, hospice workers help both patients and families deal with death in a truly dignified way.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week's coming up here in just a few minutes. A few more minutes with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway on media double standard for faith-based initiatives. Steve called before the break. He had two questions. You answered one of them. The other one was what kind of difference in coverage did you detect on how the media covers various presidential candidates who have an overt religious association. In this case, he cited the Reverend Jesse Jackson and Mike Huckabee, both ordained ministers.
Well, and certainly there was a disparity in how the Reverend Jesse Jackson and Mike Huckabee were covered, but I almost think that it's a more subtle and important difference in how someone like a Barack Obama and a George Bush are covered. Both of those had strong religious ties. President Obama had strong religious ties with the, or had strong political ties with the religious left, obviously a member of a United Church of Christ congregation, which is the church body that my own mother came out of, but it's known for being extremely politically active. And in some sense, the political activism drives the church, versus President Bush, who was Methodist but had a lot of support from evangelical Christians on the right. I'm not sure if you remember back in 2004 when he won that narrow re-election. Well, I guess it wasn't terribly narrow, or wasn't as narrow as the previous one, but the New York Times opined and all these other publications, I mean, they freaked out, and all of the headlines were about theocracy coming to America, and, well, I guess it's certain that the religious right controls the country. And 4 years later, President Obama wins with heavy support from the religious left and a campaign that was full of religion, and all the coverage was just very positive. You know, this is hope, change, a united country moving forward, you know, and there was no concern about the political activism of that group of religious people. And it's just, it's sort of amazing to watch. And I think the press did was so biased in this last election that they've even had, you know, some people have been admitting that the coverage was beyond the pale. But it's kind of interesting to watch.
With only about 30 seconds, have either President Bush or now President Obama been able to clear up the issue of if you get a federal grant, how that money exactly can be used? About 30 seconds.
Well, in both cases, both presidents said you cannot use that money to proselytize. And so that means there basically can be no religious component for the social program that you run. I've always found that kind of ironic as someone who believes that perhaps the religious views of the organization are what make the program effective, and to strip any religiosity from those programs might you might end up seeing a negligible effect in the long run. So both of them had exactly the same view on that. And I think that will be an interesting question for the future, and people are studying that. But again, no difference between the two offices.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a journalist in Washington, D.C., a contributor to GetReligion.org. She's author of a column in the Wall Street Journal titled Faith-Based Double Standards. We'll paste a link to her Wall Street Journal column at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand and look for Faith-Based Double Standards. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.